Well, Nicola Sturgeon is running the country. That's pretty obvious. And, I mean, she's the only politician over these last 3 days who's been speaking with clarity, consideration, and has obviously worked out a plan. I mean, Cameron's gone, Corbyn's going, the Chancellor's in hiding, or maybe he's been kidnapped and nobody will pay the ransom. Well, whatever it is, he's nowhere to be seen. And the rest of them are running about like headless chickens. But Nicola Sturgeon is total opposite of that, total calm, authority, telling people how it is in Scotland, what she's going to do, and that's why people have confidence in her and no confidence in the Westminster establishment.
And she's saying that the Scottish Parliament is going to veto the result of the referendum, effectively, isn't she?
No, what she's saying is that in order to bring effect to these considerations in Scotland, the UK government would have to get a legislative consent motion through the Scottish Parliament, and she's unwilling to give them a carte blanche. She's quite right. She's speaking for the 62% of people in Scotland who voted to remain within the European Union.
And that refusal to allow a letter of consent to go through amounts, in your view, to a clear veto. So if the British government says, we are starting the process now, we want Scotland to be on board with that, it is in the gift of the Scottish Parliament to say, no, we are not taking part in that, and therefore we are saying, no, it cannot happen.
Yes, that covers Scotland. I mean, it's easy enough for the UK government to ring-fence things so they can go ahead with everyone else if that's what they're choosing to do. But, you know, we're not going to facilitate the process of moving out of Europe against the will of the Scottish people. And it has to be said, you know, there's plenty of people signing the petition. I think it's reached 3.5 million. Well, people will say, well, wait a minute, did we think about this properly? Now, my own opinion...
They should have voted in the referendum, shouldn't they, Alex, instead of signing the petition?
And you should have waited to the second half of my sentence. My own opinion is that parliamentarians from England have got no choice but to follow the will of the people of England. No choice whatsoever, because they voted for a referendum. But in Scotland, we're faced with having a government we didn't elect, having a referendum we didn't want, now proposing to drag Scotland out of Europe against the will of the Scottish people. You can understand why we're a tad upset.
Oh, I can, but is the thing that therefore follows, Alex, a referendum in Scotland to leave the United Kingdom? It must do from what you're saying, isn't it?
I think, as Nicola Sturgeon said, it's both on the table and it's now highly likely. Now, because I've got considerable faith in Nicola Sturgeon's negotiating abilities, I'm quite certain that every possible avenue will be explored to bring the wishes of the Scottish people into effect, every possible avenue. And I'm certain that she'll carry that forward as Westminster continues in its black hole of chaos over the next few months. So you'll get a very considered response from Scotland, negotiating with the European leaders, negotiating with the variety of interests in Scotland and in the UK, negotiating with the Mayor of London, who's obviously got key concerns about what's happening to the financial sector at the present moment, and trying to bring calm out of this chaos in which the Westminster establishment has left this country.
Finally, I suppose, on that, or maybe this is slightly broader than that, has this referendum left the country in hock to nationalism? You have Scottish nationalism, which expresses itself very clearly and in a pro-European fashion. You've got English nationalism, which expresses itself very clearly in an anti-European sentiment. Meanwhile, there's this horrible threat, or for some people a horrible threat, of a united Ireland, the Irish nationalism rising again. Is the political scene in the United Kingdom now one based on nationalism, do you think?
Well, it depends on how people express themselves. I mean, in Scotland, the case for Scottish nationhood, nationalism is progressive. It is one which carries the support of people from all ethnic backgrounds. It's inclusive. It's pro-immigration. It wants more people to come to Scotland. It's outward-looking. It wants to be part of Europe. In Ireland, of course, it's a campaign for Irish unity, which has been going on for many hundreds of years. In England, it does seem to have been tapped as a very frustrated, a very angry call from people who feel they've been left behind by the political establishment and not cared about. But I think one thing that politicians should be doing, as well as Nicola Sturgeon providing the leadership to take the country forward, is finding a way to hold the country together. And I don't mean by that holding Ireland and Scotland against the will of the people being governed from London. I'm talking about holding the communities of the country together. Fundamentally more important, actually, than political parties. It's to hold the communities together and make sure that everybody knows that their government and their political representatives are acting in their best interests and are not ignoring them or leaving them behind or making them feel frustrated or isolated or, in some cases, of course, threatened. And that's really important right now.
And let's talk about those political leaders for a second. Did you, when you looked into the eyes of Michael Gove and Boris Johnson as they gave their funereal victory speech on Friday, did they look to you like people who have a plan, who know what the next steps are for the next 2 years to take us out of the European Union? Or do you look at them and think they have no clue about what happens next?
Well, I think everybody. But what came to my mind was that Robert Redford film, The Candidate. People familiar with it. Redford wins the senatorial race in California and looks at his campaign manager and says, "What on earth do I do now?"
Yeah. Well, it reminded me, Alex, of the end of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, where they look out the window, the entire Bolivian army is waiting for them. Because I don't think they know. These are people who pursued an idea. And they pursued it as journalists, potentially, didn't they? And now they have to deal with it as statesmen. Are they the statesmen, in your opinion, to handle the political vagaries that will now follow?
Yeah, I was thinking Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, more like Pinky and Perky, I would have thought. But they certainly didn't look like they were people who were in control of events. Nor, I suspect, people who expected to win. I think the problem with Boris's calculation, I think Boris's calculation was based on a narrow defeat and a passport to the Tory leadership, as opposed to a narrow victory and having to deal with the consequences. And of course, Cameron has handed them the poison chalice. You know, Cameron's leaving speech, you know, "I'm off," and
good luck.
Somebody else is going to have to deal with this. Good luck to you. I mean, it's a sort of constitutional equivalent of there's no money left in the Treasury. there's no political capital left in Downing Street. Over to you, Boris. Let's see how you got on with it. So I think the dawning realisation on Michael Gove and Boris Johnson that if you break something, then you own it, is the problem and explains the funereal press conference.
Do you buy, Alex, the idea that, until we actually instigate this Article 50, we are still members of the European Union? Do you think there's a plausible scenario potentially driven out of Scotland which via a general election would mean that we end up not leaving the European Union? Do you think there's a plausible series of events that keep us in the European Union despite the referendum?
Well, the only way you can reverse a referendum result, which a parliament has voted for against my wishes, incidentally, I voted against this referendum. But the only way you can do that is if there's a significant material change of circumstances, right? And you can't just say, as some people want, parliamentarians, and I saw a couple of Labour MPs say, "Oh, we'll just ignore the verdict of the people." You can't do that. But if there was a significant change of circumstances, and whatever that might be, a general election is one conceivable argument. If you had a general election and a party was returned saying, "No, we're not going to go ahead with this," then that is a material change in circumstances, because it could only be there if they're elected by the people. But I don't actually see that happening.
You don't see a general election happening?
No, I can see a general election happening. I don't see a party winning on a platform of saying, "Well, listen, we're going to reverse the referendum result." I'm talking about here in England.
Yeah.
I would have thought that they'll run into a lot of problems. Mind you, this whole business that the UK is in at the present moment, the conflation of the political system, the disintegration, the disarray, the end of the Prime Minister, the end of the opposition leader probably, all of this was unnecessary.
Yeah.
And even with people who wanted to leave the European Union, the difficulty, of course, was that if the anti-European Union side had put forward, "Look, we're going for Norway, we're going for Switzerland, we're going to the European Economic Area or EFTA," none of this dislocation would have happened. The problem, of course, was that they founded their campaign not against the European Union. They founded their campaign effectively against immigration. And the difficulty with having a solution which would allow the economy to continue without too much hassle, as it would have in the EEA, is that it would have meant a free movement of people, which would have been against the nature of the campaign they'd been fighting. So effectively, we're left with this chaos and the potential now for significant economic downside because of the poisonous nature of the political campaign of the two guys, that's Johnston and Gove, who look so depressed at their victory press conference.
Do you think that until Donald Trump gets elected in November, we are the embarrassing cousin of the political system? Do you think people from outside of this country, this nation, are looking at us going, I can't believe Britain, the mother of parliaments, a place of order and certainty, has done this to themselves?
I think actually probably this is bad news for Trump, is it not? The American electorate notoriously don't pay all that much attention to what's happening overseas, but anything they do see about this, I would have thought. Sorry, I'm laughing. I'm just looking at a picture on the television of Mr. Watson at Glastonbury.
I know. Basically, we have a political system now, Alex, where we're waiting to hear from the deputy leader of the opposition after his train gets in from Glastonbury. Is this not bordering on farce?
Well, it is bordering on farce. So if any Americans are looking at it, that'll probably do some damage to Mr. Trump's prospects. That might be a silver lining in all this chaos. But yeah, I mean, as I say, you can't imagine. Well, maybe you can see the contrast between what people in Scotland are being offered, which is calm, clear authority of somebody from Nicola Sturgeon's cabinet who've worked out what they're doing, why they're doing it, what they have to do. It's not a circumstance they wanted to happen, but nonetheless, dealing with the circumstances as they arise and having a plan to go forward, and the total disarray and chaos which has enveloped Westminster. I mean, it's a total day and night contrast.